Meeting to order. These are for items on the agenda. For items not on the agenda, otherwise within our jurisdiction. We have quite a few cards regarding the Willits project, and I feel we have two governments, and we're going to give them more time. First, we have Mads Strong, who is a legislative political subdivision in the Willits City Council, and you'll be given 10 minutes. And then we're honored, and Yawiaka Pita, welcome to the Pomone Tribe representing Priscilla Hunter, who will also be granted 10 minutes. And then everybody else will, non-governmental entities, will have 3 minutes. And we will, with that, start with Madge Strong.
Yes. Thank you very
much.
Thank
you for taking the time
thank
to visit
you.
Us.
And good morning to Chair and board members and staff. So I thought I only had 3 minutes, but I don't think I'll use 10.
It's okay. We actually have a pretty packed meeting, but
yeah,
I wanted to make sure your efforts are coming.
We're
duly noted.
Okay. So I believe that Matt St. John has distributed to you. Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Madge Strong. I am with the Willits City Council. There's a memo here that isn't from the Willits City Council. It's basically from the Save Our Little Lake Valley group, which I'm also very involved with. But on behalf of the City Council, and also speaking on behalf of the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors, both of those elected official bodies have recommended that herbicides not be used in the Little Lake Valley mitigation lands by Caltrans or its contractor. And there are resolutions, which I believe you already have received from both of those local elected bodies to that effect. The Board of Supervisors also pointed out that trying to eradicate the Himalayan blackberries may not be, first of all, really desirable. There are some advantages to having it there, and various methods of trying to eliminate it, most particularly the herbicide method, is the least desirable, but even mechanical methods could have some serious adverse effects because you disturbed the creekside slopes and soils, and this stuff goes right into the creeks, which affects the habitat value of the creeks. And we also have our coho, salmon, and steelhead runs here in Little Lake Valley. So these are all very important habitats to us. And even if you then try to eradicate the blackberries by whatever methods you use, it's entirely likely that they'll come right back because the seeds, they're very endemic, and they've been actually naturalized. There was a native blackberry, and there's still a few of those left. But the Himalayan blackberries are a little bit more aggressive, and they've taken over largely. But the blackberries, as I said, there are blackberries that are native to our area, and they provide habitat. They stabilize the creek sides. They're not necessarily a terribly undesirable species, even if they aren't the native blackberries. The point being, the goal is to enhance our wetlands. The whole goal of the mitigation plan that is part of compensating for the damage that's being done due to the bypass construction is to enhance and protect and perhaps create some new wetland habitats. But in trying to achieve that goal, if you use methods that are themselves harmful, you have not gone forward, you've gone backwards. Herbicides in particular are, by the way, it is your board that originally adopted the policy that there shall be no herbicides used in the mitigation lands. And that was something that Caltrans assured the public and agencies and everybody repeatedly for years, they would not use herbicides. They have now reversed that policy and are proposing to, in fact, use herbicides. The herbicides that they're planning to use are approved by the state and by the federal government that reviews these kinds of things, based on science that is provided by Monsanto and others. And as you know, this is a long history of being assured by corporate and hired scientists that these things are perfectly harmless. They're even called water-friendly herbicides. I don't really accept that. I don't think we were assured that tobacco was harmless. We were assured that DDT and Agent Orange and so forth. I think right now we're finding more and more science is coming out that these herbicides, and Roundup being one of them, are in fact extremely harmful to human health, but obviously to the environment, to our rivers, to our wetland vegetation, to our bird life, our fish life, to the humans that are, even if there's no direct eating of the the plants that are being subjected to it, what about the workers that apply it? And what about the basket weavers that collect the creekside reeds to use in basket weaving? So human, environmental, water, all of these things are affected. One of the points that I think other people might speak to that, to some of those concerns, the one that I wanted to also kind of emphasize being an elected official in the city of Willits is that there's been extremely little public involvement or public or education on these issues. Your staff, and I thank them for their letter of June 8th to the Caltrans District 1, it points out, A, that it says that they're not going to use herbicides, and if they want to use herbicides, despite this general policy that they shouldn't, if they want to, one is that they are supposed to consult with the Board of Supervisors. Well, not only did they not consult with, but the Board of Supervisors, by unanimous vote, adopted a very strong resolution urging that they not use herbicides. So I think it would be really unconscionable for them to simply ignore that. And I think it would be unconscionable for you as the Water Board with independent authority over the 401 permit to ignore this statement from the Board of Supervisors and the Willits City Council. And then the rest of the public. We live in this valley. There are people who are dependent on the wells. There are people that like to go hiking, all of these things. And so I think the MMP, the Mitigation and Monitoring Plan, and in particular right now the emphasis on this eradication program that has very significant potential adverse impacts, needs to be opened up to public scrutiny. And so what we're urging is that you, not at this meeting because it's not even agendized, but that you require extreme caution, and that you bring it back to a public hearing here, because the Water Board does have its authority under the 401 permit to review this, to review the MMP itself, to see whether the least environmentally damaging alternatives and, in fact, the most environmentally beneficial approaches are made in this whole idea of mitigating the damage that's been done. The damage has already been done on the project itself. Let's not also have damage on the mitigation part of it. It's like an oxymoron. You're going to damage it to save it. So I hope you will, in fact, open this up to a public hearing and review these very important matters. Thank you.
Next, we'll call Priscilla Hunter from the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Council, and I wanted to thank the council for thinking to send a representative to us. And again, Yahweh Yaka Pita, you're very welcome to be here.
Good morning. My name is Priscilla Hunter. I'm a representative of the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Indians. And on May 26th, we did submit a letter to Matt John, the executive officer of the Quality Control Board. And you're John, right? St. John, I'm sorry. And in there, we quoted many concerns about from the tribe regarding the use of herbicides on the mitigation land. And I'm not sure if the board has reviewed that letter. So I would hope that it does go to the board and to read more of our concerns. One is the use of herbicide in the mitigation area. We have basket weavers that when they have gathered the material, at times they have to use their mouth to peel off the bark on the willow. And in doing so, they come up with some throat and mouth rashes, you know, so it's very dangerous for our basket weavers, and also for the regarding the foods, the medicines that are gathered in that area, and you know, especially for the water, you know, all this herbicides, that's where it's going to go, right into the water, and it's going to, you know, leave a poisoning effect on all of us. So I wanted to make sure we go on record that we oppose the use of herbicide up in the mitigation area. Strongly opposed, I would hope. And just recently, this is another item regarding the mitigation plan. Nowhere in that mitigation plan, as far as I have reviewed, they talk about the cultural sites, our ancestral sites, nowhere in there. But yet the tribes have found out that whole wetlands could be considered as an archaeological area. We've had several sites that have been destroyed. And, you know, Caltrans just goes like, oops, sorry. No, not even sorry, but there was no adverse impact. But now they're going on to the mitigation land. And we know this land, a lot of the land was bought to do wetlands. You know, I've never seen wetlands made. You know, I mean, it's done by nature, you know, the wetlands, but they're going to make wetlands out of this other land. But on those wetlands, on those mitigation land, there are a lot of archaeological sites, a lot. And we just been informed that on there they're doing data recovery investigation in several of the parcels within the mitigation lands. And they're saying it's necessary due to wetlands creation, okay, requirements. And then it says, should wetland creation requirements change, Caltrans will make every effort to avoid further affecting these properties and will determine if establishing additional ESAs are warranted to protect the properties. You know, we're asking you to, you know, open it up to look at, you know, putting a hold on this, because it's you know, I just feel our ancestral cries each time, and I get all this mail to me, email to our tribe, saying, oh, we're not going to do any more boundaries on these, on the sites, because we don't have time, and we have to, we're sorry, but we have to make wetlands here on these lands, because that's what Water Board says. They want those wetlands, you know. And I can understand, you know, wanting to have those wetlands and then they get credit for it. I quite don't understand that whole thing. So it's like it's between the Water Board and the Army Corps. They're saying they're being rushed by these agencies to get this done. So what happens? History repeats itself. You know, what happened to the Indian people being chased and, you know, and kidnapped, raped, and the whole thing. And right now it's, we have cultural sites up there that saddens us that, again, you know, you're destroying sites that Indian people care about, you know, and I've expressed these opinions over and over, and it's like talking to, you know, the air, you know, and it's really hard to, you know that they are destroying these sites up here, but yet I can't do anything about it. You know, it makes me feel like, you know, going up there, and they won't even give me some protective gears, you know, to go in there. But I feel like going up there and just saying, hey, stop. You know, but I know if I'm going to go on that property, it's trespassing and I could get arrested. You know, so I plead to you, you know, to you know, hear us. You know, at least set time aside from the board, or come up there and, you know, hear what we like to have done, you know, because Caltrans is not listening. You know, they say, well, we got to get this done. But, I appreciate, you know, you hearing me and giving this additional time. But, you know, our tribe is unhappy. Our Indian people are unhappy in our area. And it's like, what can we do? So I thank you.
Okay, thank you. One, it'd be nice if those emails from Caltrans got forwarded to our staff so we can track it.
Okay.
That would be very helpful. And have you talked to the California Heritage Commission at all? For
they say they have no jurisdiction. So.
And then lastly, we're partially responsible, including myself, for the hurry-up phase. The reasoning was Caltrans was supposed to have the mitigation done quite some time ago, supposed to have been properly funded, and I've been trying to hold them accountable, and I think this board has, that, wait a second, where's the mitigation at all? So that's one reason we've been putting pressure on the time, just to explain to you, is we felt that without that, the mitigation was coming pretty slow, I guess, to say the least.
The documents that they're supposed to do a programmatic agreement with our tribe, they haven't even completed that. That was supposed to have been done before they even do construction.
Well, that's why we want the email trail and some other things so that we can take a look at it. It's very late in the project, and we don't want to get in a situation where Caltrans doesn't have to meet its mitigation requirements. So that's the balance, but I think we'll take a very hard look at the issues you presented.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. We have a huge number of cards of people that are against the herbicides. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to call everyone up who's going to speak on the herbicide issue, ask how many are for it and how many are against. we will go hear testimony, but if it's just going to be the same thing over and over again, you know, take note of that. So with that, is everyone who's against the Willits bypass use of herbicides, please stand up. Okay. And so 1, 2, 3, 4, 3, 5, 7, 8, 9, 11. 13 people in the audience stood up to express their opposition to the herbicides. I will now go down and call the cards, but if you, like I said, I think we've gotten the message. Well, we're going to finish this item, and I'll call you up first after that, okay? And I'm sorry, but everyone wants to be heard, and I'm in a process of trying to shorten the time span, and I need to be respected in that. And I am sorry because I've been in your shoes of having work and testify, and it's a tough. We don't necessarily call them first card, and we had government representatives here that we wanted to respect. So I'll call Alex Harder. Do you want to speak or? And all of these are 3 minutes.
So on my way over here, a guy asked me, so you must be part of the road crew. I'm sorry, what? I just did do into the mic. My name is Alex Harder, and I said, no, I'm actually part of the anti-road crew, or rather, I'm part of those who, I'd say for myself, one road people can actually use. The problem with an herbicide treatment on this thing is... At this point, we've been studying it, and as Councilmember Strong said, the problem with herbicides has been that it's probable that they cause extreme harm. But the trick is it's possible that they actually cause an active infection if they proceed far enough. And when you're talking about disease, you really are facing a full new threshold of unknown possibilities with the problems of, they talked about Roundup. Well, they're likely going to use a chemical similar to Roundup, or it itself, in fact, is just a variant of Agent Orange. So what we've got here is Caltrans, well known as Big Orange, is going to be spraying Agent Orange, potentially, in an area which normally this is done throughout the state everywhere. But Mendocino County is relatively unaffected in this regard. You don't have so many to look around. You see a lot of people try to do organic farming and such there. Meanwhile, the natives here are, they're all that's left. I mean, there was an actual genocide there, and they're trying to speak out against cultural genocide of their sites, which the fact that they're not allowed on for their safety, they were allowed on, they just were denied the equipment to visit. So they're so far behind the system at this point that email trail and trying to handle all that stuff is more than any people can handle, is probably my main point here. And they should have more time. They definitely could do a lot better technologically than this. I mean, personally, I think the mechanical methods might be okay if not for the creekside disturbance and destruction. But the problem with that is it doesn't work quite as well as just covering it up with plastic, solarization, getting locals to pick it, whatever they want. But I think the whole idea of a mitigation charade, as a friend of journalists has put it, is sort of counterproductive. Is there a time limit? So it's, sometimes you try to be too productive, you go too fast. You know, productivity can be in your mind more than in fact. And so that keeps counting down. I'll just take off.
Randy Dalton, and then after that, Cynthia Razor Jevons, be on board.
I have a question. I'm going to talk about more than just the herbicides. I'd like to talk about this. Randy Dalton. I'd like to.
You've got 3 minutes. It's okay. Public time.
Okay. I'd like to give reference to the salmon. The man that spoke in the beginning said that they are endangered. They're on the brink of extinction. This little lake valley has been an estuary for the salmon for thousands and thousands of years, and it is being destroyed. I am heartbroken because as we sit here, the trucks are in a flurry of chaos trying to put topsoil. It's prime ag land that is being destroyed. You cannot grow crops on the ridge tops. CEQA mandates that we protect and preserve our prime ag lands. It mandates that we protect and preserve endangered species. 2,000 trees were cut down. And then we wonder why there's a drought. You know, connect the dots. There's a whole lot happening here that is being unaccounted for. $300 million is being poured into a productive inland delta that has taken eons to build and create, and for what, 89,000 people in the state, in the county of Mendocino. It's overkill. My grandfather was an engineer who helped to build Hetch Hetchy Dam, Golden Gate Bridge, Carquinez Strait Bridge. They ran him over with a 10-ton water truck when they were building 680 Freeway in Antioch. He was a county inspector. They didn't see the 6'2", 235-pound major. So I have a held resentment against Caltrans because there's too much money moving too fast. The cumulative impacts, where are they going with this road? I've lived in Laytonville for 35 years. If they think that they're going to force this pavement plop in the salmon streams of Outlet Creek or 10 Mile or Caddo Creek and have no significant environmental impact, you're not paying attention. Somebody is not doing the scientific review and monitoring that needs to be done properly. I got 100% on my SAT. My husband graduated from Berkeley in conservation of natural resources. I don't come to public meetings often. This has really reached the point of absurdity. This is insane. It's no longer sensible. It's no longer sensitive. We are creative and radiant, and the valley is beautiful. I counted 187 horses, prime ag land, 25-foot deep in water tables, in top soil. And it's living water. Where's the water going to go? You get impervious surfaces, 100% increase in runoff from the asphalt. Where's that water going to go? They put 35,000 wick drains. It's not even in the EIR. So where's the water going to go? So you're going to flood the entire valley of Willits and all the people that are there. You're concerned about water, drinking water. You give the Yurok people a vending machine. What an insult. I'm insulted because of the
conditions. Your time is up, ma'am.
Well, it's overkill. It's too much. It's the earthquakes are going to come. And
thank
when
you
we do, it's
for your testimony.
Okay, well,
Cynthia Reiser-Jevons and then Beth Rydell on board, please.
Good morning. Thank you for listening to us. I am Cynthia Reiser-Jevons from Willits. And what I'd like to share today is poison is poisonous. Herbicides are poison. If we use herbicides in sensitive wetlands, these wetlands will be poisoned, the plants will be poisoned, the fish and animals will be poisoned, and the water table will be poisoned, and humans will be poisoned too. All life is connected. I don't know if Caltrans wants to use poisons on the Willits wetlands because they don't understand the severe harm it will cause, or because they do understand the full implications, or they simply don't care. A compelling reason is required for you to grant this permit, and the public has not heard a real one yet. Has Caltrans provided you, the Water Board, with any true and compelling reason justifying poisoning the Willits wetlands? Certainly there are many compelling and rational reasons that herbicides should not be used in the Willits wetlands. Fortunately, you, as a North Coast Regional Water Board, knows that wetlands should not be poisoned no matter what Caltrans imagines it wants. The blackberries are not a problem for anyone except for Caltrans's imagination. If the MMP says they should be removed, that was not presented for public review, and that unrealistic plan should be changed. Much of importance was missed because the MMP did not have public review, including that the native cultural sites were completely ignored, which is absolutely wrong. If the blackberries are removed temporarily, it will be at great environmental cost, and they will just grow back anyway. So this game is just a theoretical poisonous exercise in futility. Meanwhile, everyone else knows that the blackberries provide food and shelter for the creatures of the wetlands, and it would be much better for the stream beds and wetlands just to leave the blackberries be. As we all know, recently the International Agency for Research on Cancer of the World Health Organization has proclaimed one well-known herbicide, Roundup, which contains glyphosate, to be a probable carcinogen. Roundup was supposed to be the most environmentally friendly of the herbicides. Monsanto has deliberately hidden the carcinogenic nature of glyphosate for 35 years, telling the world that it causes no environmental harm, breaks down quickly, and is not retained in human tissues. The fact that their story was a huge, extremely destructive lie, and now whole countries are banning the stuff. We should too. Current scientific evidence shows that glyphosate causes significant incidences of cell tumors and tumor growth in multiple organs and tissues and enters bone marrow almost immediately, preventing the formation of new cells and living organisms. Although the truth about other herbicides has not yet forcibly emerged, any chemical that kills is dangerous. Wetlands especially deserve no herbicides of any kind. Anyone that tells you that poison is not harmful is either very stupid or deliberately lying. Fortunately, you, the North Coast Regional Water Board, has the power, authority, and duty to protect the Willits wetlands from these destructive lies and from these destructive poisons. We are counting on you to keep it simple. Just tell Caltrans, no herbicides, no permit for poisons on the Willits wetlands. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Beth Rydell. And then Naomi Wagner is up next afterwards.
Thank you for this time. I want to read a letter from John and Carlene Ford. Oh, excuse me. My name is Beth Rydell. I'm from Willits. So this letter is from John and Carlene Ford, who are ranchers in the Little Lake Valley. They're my neighbors. They've been there a very long time. And they have worked very hard to care for this valley and take care of things. Their letter. We understand that Caltrans is considering the use of herbicides and pesticides in the Little Lake Valley to control the non-native species. The non-native grasses will not be eliminated through use of chemicals. These grasses have been there so long they've almost become native grasses. It's impossible to control the domestic seeds and non-native seeds that are carried by the creeks and spread by the flooding that occurs throughout the Little Lake Valley. The use of herbicides and pesticides is unnecessary. The Willits Bypass Grazing Management Plan, written in May of 2014 by Peter Van Horn and Larry Ford, states the following under invasive species. Grazing will be used as a management tool to reduce existing populations of invasive plants and to deter new or expanded infestations. Targeted grazing, adjusting the timing and intensity to achieve the specific objectives related to the plant species' natural history, can be effective as a standalone method or in combination with other methods. Several of the invasive species that are there, such as Himalayan blackberry and Medusa head, are known to increase where grazing and or haying is excluded. In the same management plan, it states, when the invasive plant itself is palatable or susceptible to trampling, grazing can be used to directly reduce the extent, abundance, and reproduction output of these plants. These are natural methods that basically are used to control invasive species. In addition to the natural methods, much of the wisdom to be used in removing the plants is better than what took place the past winter. For instance, Caltrans just removed some of the huge clusters of berry roots and vines beside Davis Creek in the valley. The removal of the massive root system along the creek bed has caused a failure of the levee system along Davis Creek in three places. This has allowed more sedimentation to go out onto the surrounding fields, which could be harmful to the very survival of Baker's meadow foam and semaphore grass, which are some of the native species we're trying to keep alive. And it needs to be noted that the Baker's meadow foam and semaphore grass populations have survived and thrived in the valley up to this point under the present management, which is using modified grazing of cattle. On a parcel in the Little Lake Valley where grazing was restricted for some time, the populations of Baker's Metaphone...
Your time is up, so you need to summarize.
...has been greatly reduced. Basically, it would... Using herbicides is not the best method and will only cause more problems. And actually, these native plants that we're trying to keep and bring back will not survive.
Thank you for your testimony. Naomi Wagner.
Naomi Wagner from Willits, Earth First. I have some visual aids that I'm going to ask my compadres to hold. I have to put these in a certain order. Please stand on this side. Okay. And there you please come here. You can see from these photos the progress of destruction. The progress of destruction on the Willits Bypass. And these are the impacts that the mitigation and monitoring plan seeks to address. So when you start over here, this is a little bit simplistic, but you'll see the original condition of the wetlands, how it looked, the grasses, the water, the shrubs, very natural looking situation. That's a seasonal wetland that floods in the winter and is drier in the summer. Here you see construction beginning. Bye-bye creek, bye-bye wetland in that picture, okay? And here you see one of the ancient oaks that was cut. There were 2,000 of those trees were cut. And here in the last picture, we have the Northern Interchange, a massive four-lane interchange freeway to nowhere because it connects to a two-lane, a half mile down the road, okay? So we have these enormous impacts. And this mitigation monitoring plan, the MMP, is supposed to compensate for that, right? That's the idea. Well, the compensation is never going to be adequate in the first place. It's not funded properly. The idea of creating wetlands where wetlands already existed is you know, really repugnant to me, anyways, to think that we could improve on the, as someone called it, the eons the system, that the ecosystem that has developed there. But then to go ahead and use poisons on it to achieve some kind of an effect of restoration is just, as it's an oxymoron. As someone mentioned, I think the previous speaker mentioned that we were receiving all these blows from Mother Nature in terms of the drought and that we're suffering. No, we have given the blows to Mother Nature. She is just responding to the treatment that we have given her. So I'm asking you, board, I think you've already been asked this, and I want to emphasize that we need to stop and take a whole nother look at this. This mitigation monitoring plan is not going to compensate for these thousands of oak trees. It's not going to compensate for the destruction of the waterways. It's not going to compensate for many, many other things that I don't have time to list here.
And your time is up, so you need to finish up.
Thank you. So I would call this basically poisoning the wetlands to save them. And I hope that you won't take part in that kind of hypocrisy. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Ellen Drill and William Ray.
My name is Ellen Drell, and I'm speaking for the Willits Environmental Center. I agree that we don't want Caltrans to not fulfill its mitigation obligations. We agree on that. We certainly agree with the Water Board staff on that. But the devil is in the details. And one of the pitfalls here is this concept of we need to hurry up, we need to hurry up. And the danger is in the details of what that hurry up means. And I think this acceptance or possible acceptance of Caltrans' desire to use herbicides is Caltrans' only way of knowing to respond to we've got to hurry up. But, you know, you can't really force nature to hurry up. So as many of the speakers have said in the past, the use of herbicides on Little Lake Valley is going to be a step backwards, and we certainly don't want to degrade the quality of Little Lake Valley wetlands and mitigation properties in order to meet some timeline that, in terms of nature repairing itself, is artificial. So the board and the staff has the full authority to adjust the nuances of the mitigation plan, and one of them is whether or not to use herbicides. And I appreciate the fact that the staff recently sent a letter to Caltrans talking about this herbicide use and asking Caltrans to consult and reconsider. I'm not exactly sure what the wording was, but the use of herbicides is on the table, and we are here to reinforce this notion that herbicides must not be used. And, of course, we're here also on behalf of the City Council and the Board of Supervisors, and I think it would certainly be a step in favor of the mitigation plan to step back from a plan that has the potential to damage the mitigation properties. And I want to make just two quick points. The board may not realize that the Little Lake Valley, the northern portion of it that is has almost all of the 2,000 acres of the mitigation properties that Caltrans purchased, is a functioning seasonal wetland, and it is functioning pretty well. And its history has never been one of intensive agriculture or row crops. It has, in the 20s and 30s, 1920s and 30s, there was some wheat and potatoes grown, but this predates any agricultural poisons that were available. This valley has never been subjected to the use of herbicides, broad-scale use of herbicides, never. Yes, it has had some degradation over the 100 years that we Europeans have been there, but it has never been subjected to broad-scale use of herbicides. They are unknown in Little Lake Valley. The purpose of the mitigation plan is to enhance the natural functioning of those wetlands that already exist.
And your time is up.
Yes, and one of the major functions of wetlands is to purify water. You don't purify water by putting herbicides on it. There is no requirement in the mitigation plan or from anybody else that Caltrans use herbicides. And I want you to know that I've given your clerk a packet of materials that speak directly to new research on the carcinogenicity of glyphosate.
Okay, and they will distribute it
and
to us, but your
time
is up.
I hope you will read them, because there is a whole world of information coming out on these herbicides now. Thank you.
Thank you. William Ray.
Good morning, board and staff. I'm William Ray from Willits, and I'll speak in similar terms about this issue. As a citizen of Mendocino County, I call on you to perform your duty to protect the water existing as your public trust, in this case, surface and underground water endangered by the illegal and deceitful mass herbicide spraying planned by Caltrans in the Willits Valley, a spraying explicitly denied in its bypass draft environmental statement, declared originally in order to get approval to build from you. It is particularly ironic that Caltrans seeks, in violation of its own declaration, which predicated your acceptance of its plan, to gain environmental points by poisoning the water table serving the flora, fauna, and humanity of the Willits Valley for future generations. This in pursuit of a project that was achieved through misrepresentations that only a full-scale freeway would be federally funded. That was false. Since this herbicide ploy is an open and shut question regarding your mandate to protect our water supply, I assume it will take no deliberation or political courage on your part to reject such a blatant and arrogant institutional move benefiting only the herbicide industry using Roundup chemicals already known to produce carcinogenic effects. There is considerable political will representing popular feeling in the Willits City Council and Mendocino County Board of Supervisors resolutions not to poison the Willits Valley, of which Caltrans now owns a quarter of the geographic entity. We expect you to perform your mandate to protect. Your duty could not be clearer.
Thank you. And I can't quite read the writing of the last name, but Pauline Corvin, if I've mispronounced it, and Mexican farm workers of Mendocino County.
Yes, my name is Pauline Corvin. I'm a federal Indian law attorney. It is my great honor to work with the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Indians in their efforts to protect their ancestral sites in the Little Lake Valley. I speak to you today as a Mexican American. I speak to you today on behalf of the applicators of this spray, and I offer into your record abstract scientific studies detailing the health hazards faced by the applicators of glyphosate. We're talking about 67 acres worth of spray that is proposed. But I will place this into the record on that topic. I want to speak as a federal Indian law attorney now. I want you to know just how little response this tribe has gotten from the water board, from your agency. Our tribal resolutions, our letters go unanswered. And yet there's a federal mandatory obligation under executive order to enter into government-to-government consultations with Indian tribes when their cultural resources are impacted. And shame on the water board, not including any reference to the protection of Native American cultural sites in the mitigation plans. Shame on the Army Corps when we requested a supplemental EIS upon the discovery of some 40 archaeological sites in the Little Lake Valley subsequent to the approval of the EIS, subsequent to construction. Many of these sites are in the mitigation lands. We have there was a supplemental EIS done for one blade of grass, the Semplifora blade of grass. There was not any response to the tribe's request for a supplemental EIS when 40 of their sites have been discovered in this project area and in the mitigation lands. It has been a dishonorable treatment of the Native American tribes of our county by every agency that has authority to make decisions to protect their cultural resources. I could nearly cry at how sad I feel that these people who were rounded up into the hills to let the current day ranchers have their lands, how their voice has gone unheeded. And I beg of you to at least have your staff respond to our letters from another nation within a nation. I beg of you to hear the cries of the Pomo elders, to hear the cries of our children. I mean, this is a cultural genocide that is occurring, and we are not given the same dignity as a blade of grass. We don't get compensation when you destroy our sites. Only temporal loss, which means biologic loss, is compensated. We get nothing but insulting treatment from the agencies we're dealing with. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Ellen Faulkner, and then there's a Freddie Lond. Are you speaking on the herbicide issue because it's not marked?
Yes. Okay,
thank you for that. Thank you.
I'm with both Little Lake Valley and Earth First, and my name is Ellen Faulkner. And I want to address the very destructive relationship that Caltrans has with any regulations that exist, including yours. They had an option at one time either to downsize and not have to hurry into their mitigations, or to hurry into their mitigations and keep on making their four-lane bypass in at the northern interchange, especially where I had the misfortune of camping across the street for a couple of years and watching everything that they did there. Because they had to speed up rather than downsize, they speeded up all right. They ripped out an existing pond with a walnut tree, a full-grown walnut tree, lovely rushes, beautiful pond surrounded by native plants. They tore that right out of there. Took them a couple of weeks. And then they dug another hole just south of there and put black plastic in it. And they got credit for that, for creating a wetland. That's how they misused these regulations. They didn't have to take that pond out, but they did. Made another pond, a half a pond, a disgusting little mosquito pond with nothing, no native plants, nothing. Okay, that's one thing I saw. The other thing I saw over the period of time that I've been working with the Native Americans is that they've been insulted, they've been stonewalled, they've been belittled, they've been disrespected in every possible way that a person could be disrespected, a tribal group could be disrespected. They have been disrespected. And that's part of the major problem here, is that no one is paying attention to the cultural genocide that is ongoing. It's even a plain old genocide that's ongoing because of the results of this destruction of their culture as it goes on, as it gets bulldozed out of the way, as it gets ruined. And there's no way that the people who were there can ever recover their own culture. And that's not okay, because it ends up with Native Americans just disappearing off the face of the earth. Nobody knows what happened to Native American women especially. That's ongoing genocide. And we all are part of it here if we're not paying attention to what's happening in Little Lake Valley right now. Caltrans just changes the rules all the time about what can be destroyed. First it was like, oh, this many artifacts in this much space. Oh, no, we'll have the space be a lot bigger.
And then you need to finish up.
Okay, and they even decided that certain artifacts that were broken, they didn't have to worry about them, bulldoze them aside. There's worse, but I don't have time to tell you. But I was there for those particular incidences of regulations being thrown aside.
Okay, thank you. We had one other speaker card. Was that regarding this issue? Margie Chandler, Water and Earth, Our Edens.
Thank you. My name is Margie Chandler. I'm from Mendocino. I just put that in because I really need to, I don't have myself prepared as these folks did. I am coming from Mendocino to help support these people because I walk our rivers, I live on this land, and there is such an importance to not be poisoning. I think that our Pomo Indians are being very much disrespected. I really agree with a lot of what's being said here. I did help to protect some of our other rivers where artifacts and sacred sites were destroyed, and we just have to stop. This is absolutely insane that we feel that we can keep stepping on these people that we've destroyed and poisoning our lands. And we all care. I'm sure that you have families and you live here. You must care about the fish and the earth and the plants that are around you. You know, I can't imagine that you would want them poisoned or these lands that we're speaking of poisoned. So I'm hoping that you really are actually absorbing. I'm sure you hear so much all week long, every day, that you are absorbed with all of this as the lands where we're speaking of are absorbed with this water, and we want to keep this there. We want to keep it natural. We want to save these lands. So please hear what these people are saying and help us out. Give us some recognition and make sure that this doesn't go on, because these people have no right to be there destroying this. If you drove through, when I drive through from Mendocino and go north, I'll be driving up the highway and just full of life and feeling good. And as soon as you get into that area, if you have not driven there and you can see the changes that they're doing and the destruction, it just is disheartening. It would make you sick. It's just wrong. And we keep doing this to our earth, and we've got to stop. There's got to be some place that we just say, this is enough. You know, we don't need these things. It's like shopping. I mean, you don't have to go and buy everything. We don't need to keep putting in all these huge roads. The roads that are there are beautiful. They've been working for years. I don't see any reason to be doing this. Kay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else on the herbicide Caltrans issue? Any board member comments very briefly? Okay, does staff want to comment?
Is there anyone for it?
Pardon? I've asked the board whether they want to make comments. First of all, this is a public forum, so we cannot take action by it as a matter of law. Okay, is there anyone in favor of herbicides being applied in the audience? Okay, there are none. I'll go back to staff. Does staff have any comments? Yeah. I just had one. Ordinarily, when we recommend wetlands, it's with the assumption various laws will be complied with, including cultural items. So I'm not trying to absolve ourselves from responsibility, but we generally don't require people to comply with other laws. We're trying to deal with what's necessary to mitigate for water quality. And I realize this dispute has Caltrans has brought the issue to our attention, as well as yourselves.
Mr. Chair, I would ask that, I understand there's a letter of June 8th. Can you please distribute that? That sounds like it's public. Can you please make sure we get a copy of that so that we could understand agency response and standing on that front?
Certainly. I did provide it to the chairman and the vice chairman, and I can provide it also to the rest of the board members.
Thank you.
It's a very faint memory, but my recollection was Caltrans said they would take care of cultural matters when they originally came in the door. And sadly, it's turned out a little differently. Thank you. Okay, that. Well, what we've done is take the testimony under public matter. The board can't direct anything as a matter of law. I do suspect our staff has heard it. We wrote a letter, and that letter reflected a viewpoint of wanting to require reconciliation with the council and with the Board of Supervisors on the issue, and expressing that before we change things, we'd like Caltrans staff to go through that public process. And so that's where it sits right now. Well, I believe we made our input on what was required for wetlands, right or wrong, at an earlier period of time. We're trying to make sure that Caltrans complies with that in the way that we understood it. Hopefully that's the best process to address the salmon. The other problem we have is this thing is almost built at this point in time. Well, that'd be great to send us a letter on that. And if staff doesn't have anything else, I'm going to move on to the rest of the public comment.
I don't have anything else. I think the points that you made were a good summary. We have a letter to Caltrans on this issue. The ball is in Caltrans court at this point, and then we will respond accordingly.
And I also want to thank Board Member Gusti. He's taken a personal interest in this and has been trying to follow up and moving things. But I'm not going to entertain the audience back and forth. We've sort of had our time on this. Right, and I think our letter is trying to accomplish that task. Okay. Next item, Brenda Edelman, algae in Russian River.
Mr. Chair, if I could suggest that you take Mr. DeWitt, if he's still in the
Is Mr. DeWitt still here? I'm sorry. I apologize, Mr. DeWitt. You're first up.
Oh, I appreciate it.
And I thought you had left, and so, which I felt very sad about, so I'm happy that you're up here. And thank you for your patience with us. And in the future, if you have those kinds of work requests, if you can get them to staff at the start of the meeting, then I'd try to accommodate the best I could. Although there's a lot of competing public interests, as you might understand.
The one that learned the most today. That was a nice presentation just for me. Thank you. Perceptions. Oh, first, my name is Dwayne DeWitt, and I'm from Roseland. Perceptions and generation of information. That's what this is about today. And the Roseland Redevelopment Project of 1984 came about after people in my boyhood neighborhood of McMinn Avenue noticed their well water contamination. Groundwater issues have now basically been going on for close to 40 years in Roseland. I just gave you a Cal Environmental Protection Agency fact sheet from 1995 when I used to come here to seek action on Acme Auto Wreckers contamination of the local stormwater runoff along Sebastopol Road. You helped to solve this. Recently, I came and I asked the board to help us citizens to get accurate current information about Roseland groundwater issues now. Today I ask you to seek not just this update, but a local public meeting needs to be held in Roseland for sharing information, hopefully as soon as possible. Also, please seek to have a water board representative on the current Roseland-specific plan technical advisory committee. Yesterday, the city of Santa Rosa held the second technical advisory committee meeting without allowing Roseland residents to be at the table or to speak. No one on this tack seems to realize the level of difficulties brownfields have created for Roseland over the last 30 years. The perceptions of contaminated properties have contributed to disinvestment and blight along Sebastopol Road and McMinn Avenue, where I'm from, in Roseland. Your help with current information can help to dispel the false perceptions that are happening out there. Also, your involvement can help obtain funding, perhaps, for urban water conservation and urban forestry along Roseland Creek. It's basically silo city out there right now. All these different governmental agencies not really working together well, and we have this lovely creek that could be a great place for stormwater retention, for lots of positive things, but we have these problems up on Sebastopol Road. Nothing's getting dealt with in the manner in which could best help the public. You folks have done that before. You've shown us that it works. So I'm asking you folks to have Mr. St. John and his able staff get with us at Roseland School, do a public information meeting, and have the city staff open up their silo to let you in. Get somebody on that technical advisory committee, and I'll be there to talk with you there too. Thank you for your time, folks.
Hey, thank you for your persistence on presenting this issue to us.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Can I ask, Mr. DeWitt's come here several times over the last couple of months, and in fact, I asked for...
And I hate to interrupt you. Can we get someone to tell Dan, Blessing of the Forest Service, that he's up next? I know he's in the hallway. And you're back. Okay, good. I just want to make sure.
Like, who's on first? Okay, we're having
fun now. Now we got to deal with the bumpies, you know.
Mr. Chair, can I ask, so Mr. DeWitt's come here several times now, and I know that we asked, as I did personally, asked for an update, and I think it's time for an update, and I'm just following up on that with you. So do you know where that is? Can you inform us of that?
I do. So Craig Hunt and his staff, Rob Dickerson is the lead, have been working on a summary of the status of all the cleanup sites within Roseland. We're very close to completing that. Once we have that summary completed, we plan to take up the request for a public meeting that we will attend to share the information on the status of those sites. We welcome being part of this technical advisory committee. As far as reporting back to the board, my suggestion is that we first have that public meeting so that then we can be reporting on the outcomes of that meeting to you.
Okay.
And that could either be in the form of an informational item or as an executive officer's written report.
Okay, great. Can you just keep me informed about when that public meeting would be, and then I'll attend?
Right. That was going to be my comment, that I hope the public meeting occurs sooner rather than later.
Yeah, well, we agree. We want it as soon as possible. At the same time, we want to have a thorough and complete summary of the status of all the sites. And as Mr. DeWitt has mentioned, as Mr. Noren knows, there are lots of sites.
Yeah,
and
it's
so
quite
it's
a
just
chore.
Taking some time to develop the chronology of the different events on all the different sites.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's quite a chore to get your arms around all those and to figure out where they're at and where they went. So just keep us informed, please, and we'll go forward from there. Thanks. Thanks, Craig.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Dwayne.
Appreciate your patience with me.
Okay, the next public agenda item is Dan Blessing, United States Forest Service, your governmental entity, so I'll give you, and that's not in all cases, but for today, in order to be consistent, we'll give you 10 minutes.
All right, thank you very much. I'm Dan Blessing. I'm the Natural Resource Staff Officer for the Klamath National Forest, and I have with me Andrew Scallon, who's the Deputy District Ranger for the Salmon Scott Ranger District of the Klamath National Forest. First of all, I would just like to send Patty Grantham, our Forest Supervisor's, regrets for not being able to attend this meeting here. She was hoping to be able to attend, but had some personal matters that she had to attend to, so I'm here pinch hitting for her, so thank you for considering that. Mr. Chairman and board members, thank you for the opportunity to speak to the North Coast Water Regional Water Quality Control Board concerning the Westside Fire Recovery Project. We are here representing the U.S. Forest Service and the Klamath National Forest to inform the board of the goals and objectives of the project. The Westside Fire Recovery Project responds to the impacts of a wildfire that occurred during the summer of 2014 and is designed to reduce hazards to the public and forest workers, provide for community protection from future fire events, restore a resilient forest ecosystem, and recover the value of fire-killed trees. All of these activities are consistent with the multiple-use mission and resource protection values of the agency. To reduce hazards to the public, forest workers, and firefighters, and protect communities, we will remove fire-killed trees and excess fuel along roadways adjacent to communities and on strategic ridge lines. To restore a resilient forest ecosystem in severely burned areas, we will reduce fuel loading through salvage harvest and post-harvest fuel treatments. Following these fuel treatments, we will reforest these areas in an effort to reestablish the ecosystem services of clean water and wildlife habitat. We will recover the economic value of the fire-killed trees through salvage harvest and reinvest the funds generated in the restoration of the fire-damaged landscape. The forest understands that the Westside Project is a large-scale restoration effort. However, we also recognize that with any large undertaking, there is a need to balance short-term impacts with the long-term benefits. Realizing that such a large-scale restoration project would generate a lot of public interest, the Forest has conducted 31 open house public meetings, participated in radio and television interviews, led several field trips, and took into consideration many comments on the draft environmental impact statement. Based on the comments received, as well as active engagement with our regulatory and tribal partners, we have modified the preferred alternative proposed in the draft environmental impact statement to be consistent with the laws and regulations, as well as the values of our communities. The Forest has been working with the Water Board staff to develop a project that meets the requirements of the silviculture waiver. The forest is currently implementing $3 million of burned area emergency response treatments to address critical legacy and sediment sources within the fire area. These treatments are another important part of the recovery of the landscape and will serve to mitigate the impacts of the long-term restoration efforts of the West Side Project. In addition, the forest is conducting a watershed condition framework restoration project in the Elk Creek portion of the fire area. This project will address all legacy sediment sites in this watershed and the conditions that have led to the listing under the Clean Water Act. The restoration work that is proposed in the West Side Fire Recovery Project is extremely time sensitive. With every day that passes, the value of the salvageable timber decreases and further marginalizes the economics of the projects and the tools that we have to meet our restoration objectives. The Chief of the Forest Service and the President's Council on Environmental Quality have recognized the nature of this emergency and have issued an emergency situation determination and parts of the alternative arrangements under NEPA, respectively. The Klamath National Forest and the U.S. Forest Service respectfully request that the board reconsider its decision to require the board review of any coverage recommended by your staff for the West Side Fire Recovery Project and instead follow the established normal process of the project water quality assessment and permitting. Thank you for your time and allowing us to address the board of this critical issue related to the Klamath National Forest and our efforts to respond to the disasters of 2014.
Just to clarify one thing, if you listen to the tapes very carefully, the board did not give direction to the executive director. The executive director volunteered coming back to the board under some circumstances. We're still trying to clarify exactly what those circumstances were, but we did not direct him. We actually think it would have been legal if we did, contrary to your note, but you never have to reach that because we never went there.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that clarification.
And any other board member comments?
I'm not sure. Is it appropriate to public comment? I don't know what.
We can make board comments if we want on a public comment or not.
Mr. Giusti, you're certainly welcome to make a comment.
Yeah.
Keeping in mind that that our board, either through my delegated authority or the board, will be taking an action. So just keep in mind that it's a pending issue.
I wanted to share what my concerns were.
And that's fine. That's fine.
And would that be appropriate?
Or
my questions, maybe concerns is too.
And this is as an individual board member, not the board as
right.
Well.
And so, I mean, I guess if you listen to the tape, I probably spoke most strongly at our last meeting in Humboldt County. But in looking over alternative two, at least the one that's available on your webpage, that's what I'm working off of. My concerns have to do with proposed actions within the established riparian reserves and late cereal reserves. In the interest of full transparency, under another presidential commission, during the 90s, I sat on the North Coast Option 9 panels that developed those reserves, and I'm still scarred from the intensity of those debates that we had in 92, 93, and 94. So, I remember the reasons why we fought so hard and argued so strongly in favor of those reserves to establish portions of the forest within the overall matrix of the forest and recognizing that some portions of the forest, particularly in late cereal reserve areas, can only develop those habitat nuances after being exposed to the ravages of nature, snow, wind, fire, and the like. So the proposals to go in a qualitative sense, if there was more quantitative information in this, it might alleviate some of my concerns. But the fact that case in point, that it says within these areas, the responsible official has chosen to salvage trees with a 70% or greater chance of dying within the next 3 to 5 years, and in the very next line, it says it is anticipated the majority of trees within the salvage units will be harvested. And that's reminiscent of what Palco did when they wanted to do a salvage operation in the headwaters. don't worry, we know what trees to pick. Just this week, the state of California, the Board of Forestry, passed passed metrics on how to address dead and dying by giving very specific instructions, marking guidelines, if you will, on which trees could be salvaged. So I'm not philosophically opposed to salvage logging, but I am uncomfortable with the vagueness of the language of how those trees will be selective. In one case, trees up to 45 inches are mentioned could be targeted for removal. You and I know that, and I know that part of the country well, a 45-inch tree has been standing there for a long time. And in the case of the state regs that just got passed this week, you know, even trees being established prior to 1800 are considered off-limit. So, again, some kind of structure of what exactly is going to happen within the working matrix would give me a lot of more comfort. And the other thing, too, I mean, in 1987, when the last big fire of 500,000 acres went through that part of the world, I was living over in Crescent City, so I've kind of watched that fire and the recovery of that fire ever since. And the 2004 paper written by Odian and Moritz and others, you know, talked about when they broke down the levels of severity and broke down, you know, the percentage of severity across the landscape. One of the things they pointed out that the 1987 fire that was evaluated in 2004, it was areas of helicopter salvaging that burned with the highest severity. And again, you're proposing to use helicopter logging, and because of the buildup of slash, you know, in some ways you're recreating a system that increased the severity in the first place. And so the whole notion of doing business as usual and not understanding or not appreciating past work that's been done on past fires in the Klamath region makes me uncomfortable. So, you know, we're repeating some actions of the past that led to higher severity fires in the first place. And then lastly, the 2011 very powerful paper written by one of your own scientists out of the Redwood Sciences Lab, Hart Welsh, who wrote a very strong piece on the role of first and second order headwater streams in the protection of amphibians. It's a great piece of paper. If you don't know Hart, he's a great guy, very consummate scientist. And the fact that we're talking about going into these riparian reserve areas that are sensitive to begin with, that we know that fine sediments can impact amphibians, again, it's just that whole uncomfort level that I have. So, you know, if you guys told me, hey, we're gonna leave the riparian reserves alone, the late serial stages alone, I'd tell you to go to work tomorrow. But again, knowing where I've come from now and being engaged in those discussions in the mid-90s to get those reserves and knowing why those reserves are important, this proposal to me doesn't honor the work and the people that put those reserves in the first place. So, I mean, I'm being as honest and blunt with you as I can be. And again, that's where my major concern is.
Yeah, we appreciate the comments, definitely appreciate the comments. And just to let you know that, you know, we had five alternatives, and our original preferred alternative was alternative two. Now we've gone to alternative three, and actually we've modified that. We've been working quite a bit with our local Fish and Wildlife Service office to modify the project. And so, you know, it is changed quite a bit from the original proposal.
Well, and I encourage you to keep, and again, the other point I wanted to make is, you know, I'd ask you to appreciate the role that you're putting this board in coming forward and with this proposal. We are the only state gatekeeper for your agency to move forward on this. I mean, you're coming to us asking us for the permit to move forward. You're not going to the Board of Forestry. You're not going to the Fish and Game Commission. So appreciate the role that we're being put in, saying, you know, we want a green light. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the role of creating jobs. I appreciate the need to get on that wood quickly before fungi and beetles start to degrade the wood. I get all that. But at the same time, I can't ignore the years and hours and hours and hours of work that went into setting up those reserves in the first place.
Yes, and I'd like to mention that we're also working with the RECO regional ecosystem team. That's the one that that monitors, you know, Northwest Forest Plan actions and making sure that we're consistent with the Northwest Forest Plan, the option 9 of that, including the reserve system. So that we're working very closely with them also.
I just had a couple concerns. I'm less informed than the prior speaker, but one just on the level of emergency for the salvage. Obviously, beetles and fungi can be a very serious problem. Some of that gets into the intensity of the outbreaks, and I had not. I know some number of years ago that was a tremendous argument because it was really an emergency. The beetles were on the move. I haven't heard so much that there's an unusually high level of beetles or fungi growth, which, not that we're trying to delay it, but gives a little bit of breathing room, and most of it should still be salvageable. So I haven't heard that addressed. The other concern I had is if we're going to have this massive of a disturbance, and you should understand this is a large operation, then I hope that there's some planning, and you may have incorporated, I don't know, but some planning for future roads, structures, landings for fighting the next fire and for salvaging after the next fire, because we can predict a lot of areas, so there's going to be more fires. In it, I think, would aid in justifying a high level of disturbance that we're really, in effect, going to cut down the disturbance on the next round. So those are
Yeah, and that's absolutely the focus of our project. This is a fuels project. This is really, you know, focused on, you know, where we're putting this landscape, you know, on a trajectory to be something that we can defend fires, kind of compartmentalize fires within that area and protect communities and get firefighters in and out of that area. You know, really focused on ridge lines where we know that we've been fighting fires for a long time, including the 1987 fires, which I was there too, you know. And, you know, we've learned a lot from those fires and how that, you know, this fire 2014 burned through that footprint and what worked and what didn't, you know. We're learning constantly. So we appreciate the comments and thoughts.
Thank you.
All right.
Brenda Edelman.
Do you mind if Barbara goes before me? She is.
Speak in the microphone. I actually can't even hear you. So,
can I? Barbara has a presentation. Can I go right after her?
After, if you're agreeable.
Yeah.
Okay. Then please take the microphone, introduce yourself, and then Brenda will come up shortly thereafter.
My name is Barbara Diaiono, and I'm from Forestville. And I've come to speak about the algae in the Russian River. I'm an artist and a homemaker and a longtime river resident, 30 years. And lately this year, well, my background to on river issues, I've been paying attention to river flow since 2004, when the water agency first wanted to lower the flow of the river, and more intensely since 2008, when the biological opinion came out. And I've taken pictures at the river documenting some of the problems we've had with lower flows. But this year, we have a special emerging problem. There's algae in the river in big mats, and we haven't seen this before. And I have on flash drive, I have the presentation on flash drive. Can I show this to you?
Yeah. Can we stay the clock while she's putting the flash drive in? Put it up on the screen, I think.
I also have physical copies that I'd like to leave with you, if that's all right.
And then I have a question for you while they're doing that. You can get it free on your time. In looking at the algae pictures, the coloration of color photographs is extremely important for identifying species. So to the best of your knowledge, is that a clear representation of the colors when you took the photos?
Yes.
Okay. And it
looked like that, and I tried to get the best print possible, laser print from Kinko's to show you the right color, but I think on the screen it'll be even better.
Okay, and one other follow-up question. It didn't look to me, based upon this color, and I don't profess to be an expert, but that it doesn't appear to be blue-green algae that's toxic. Yeah, and I'm not saying that it isn't terrible that we have algae mats and we'll deal with that, but I didn't detect that from the color photograph because it has very distinct color bands. Okay.
This shows the spots where I took pictures. So go ahead. This is at Mirabel. And Mirabel looked pretty good. No, not much algae. There's a lot of Ludwigia growth. This is Mirabel. Again, you can see the shoreline looks pretty good. Go ahead. Steelhead. Lots of Ludwigia, but the shoreline looked pretty good. I didn't see mats of algae. Keep going. Children's Beach. We've noticed soap suds here this year, and when I took pictures in 2013, I also noticed soap suds here. I don't know if they just occur naturally, but there's kind of flotillas of soap suds coming down in this area, and Ludwigia. Hacienda Bridge, you see the Ludwigia, and in the distance, that little island down there, go ahead, keep going. You can see that by that little island, there's starting to grow stuff in the river. Okay, go ahead. Then we get to Oddfellows Park Bridge. It's getting worse. And you can see at the shoreline there's a lot of muck, and go ahead. And then Rio Nido, we start to get big mats of it in the river. You can keep going. The ducks seem to like the algae to find food. And then this is beyond the Guerneville. This is getting down to Guerneville and beyond the bridge. The dam hasn't been put up yet. You can see the growth at the shoreline. And here we're starting, this is below the Guerneville Bridge downstream. You can see mats of algae starting to form. And I haven't seen these big mats of algae even in August. We're getting to the last of the pictures. Yeah, that's about the color that I saw, as far as the color. And this is the last picture. The update on what's happening with this is some of the older algae is turning brown on top and orange, and there's new stuff cropping up. Now, we've had trouble with algae growth and water quality with flows of 100 cubic feet per second at Hacienda Bridge. And now the drought proposal is, 85 cubic feet per second? And then now it's the new proposal is 50.
Out of your time. So does it?
Okay,
is Brenda going to give you her?
I'm really wondering what's going to happen, but I'm done.
Thank you.
Uh,
Barbara, Brenda. can I ask you one question, please? I'm sorry, Brenda. Okay. Those were taken, if I'm right, on 5/20, which is almost a month ago. We haven't had a lot of tremendously hot weather, but have you noticed any difference? I mean,
I have some pictures she's going to pass around. I just have one set of pictures, but okay. I got down to the vacation beach area just a few days ago and got some pictures, and it was very bad. Now, whether, you know, it's hard to judge to what extent it's changed since a month ago, but it's very, very bad right now. And I'd like to start and go through my presentation, okay, and I'll address that
just,
in more
just
detail.
Because I think we all know that August is when you're going to see the really big stuff.
Anyway, I'm one of the people who submitted extensive comments on the temporary urgency change order, which originally was going to bring flows down to 85 CFS. The flows have been around 125, but now they're down to about 115. They're going down. 125 is generally normal. I sent a copy of all my comments to Matt, and I'm not sure if you've seen them or not, but I also submitted some documents and some pictures with that. I'm concerned that I've never seen things this bad at this time of year and this level of flow. And as far as toxic algae goes, this is my deep concern because I saw some algae in 2009 in August that in the Monterio area, which is downstream of this area we pictured today. And it very much had that color you're talking about, where it gets that iridescent look to it. And I'm concerned that if they go down to 50 or even 60 or 70, the way things are going, I think we're going to have a serious problem. I did meet with Matt about this, and we talked about it. If we have a real hot summer and flows go down very low, with this going on, I think we're going to have a very serious problem, and it needs to be tracked slowly. Tracked carefully. The water agency's been taking phosphorus readings in the lower river. Last year's the phosphorus readings, every single one of them was higher than what the objective was. And in fact, here's the report, and you can just see the red, the straight line of red is all phosphorus at all the lower river beaches. So there's all different kinds of algae there. I don't really know the difference from one to the other, but those massive areas with algae are quite serious, and they have to be having an effect on the environment and on the people who need to use it. I was concerned that the water agency is making the argument that they can't release any more water for the lower river and to deal with these issues, when at the same time they go to conferences with development people and tell them there's plenty of water for new buildings and growth. I'm also concerned they made a contract that's separate from their other contracts with contractors to purchase water with Marin Municipal Water District to allow them to get as much as 14,300 acre feet of water each year from our system. And they do pay more for the water, but the environment doesn't care how much they pay for the water. And that's the highest amount any contractor uses, with the exception of Santa Rosa. None of the other contractors use that much water. I brought up some concerns about it and just kind of got not responded to. They have what amounts to, I think, provisions made to allow them to go as long as 50 years on this contract. There was no environmental review. So on the one hand, the water agency is telling us, oh, no, we can't release more water. On the other hand, they're going around telling other people that, oh, there's plenty of water. So anyway, those are my major points, and I appreciate any attention you can give to this. We're going to continue taking pictures this summer, and I hope that your board will be able to take some kind of active role in overseeing what's going on.
Hey, thank you for your testimony and bringing this to our attention. Any board member comments?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Massey.
Mr. St. John and or perhaps Mr. Moore. Yesterday's reduction, as I understand it, is an emergency reduction with 25 cubic feet in the upper river and 50 in the lower river. A, does it go into effect because it is an emergency? Okay, so this will happen, Brenda.
I'm not questioning that. I'm questioning how they can have water for these other purposes.
No, I understand that, but for me, this is reality. We're now down to 50. That's what we're going to see. So it is not a guess. Because in our region up north, we have had blue-green algae, and I can't believe that with those kind of levels that we're not going to see some somewhere, and we don't. What provision do we have for such things?
So when the water agency was working on their temporary urgency change order, they are required to consult with us. And so we've had several meetings with water agency staff related to water quality monitoring that needs to occur under these low flow conditions. Rich Fadness, our swamp coordinator, and I asked them to be monitoring for algae cell counts. Mm-hmm. And we there's a probe that can be used with the YSI DataSon probes for measuring blue-green algae cell counts. I don't understand the technology very well, but it's a screening tool to look to determine the presence of the cell density of the types of algae that can cause algal toxins. So we've loaned that probe we've loaned a probe to the water agency for them to be used on their weekly monitoring efforts. We have funds, and we met with Brenda and talked about this. We have funds through our swamp program to monitor for algal toxins. It's not a lot, but because the samples are expensive, but we have the capacity for 20 samples this summer to send to a lab. So we'll use the probe as a screening tool, and then when the cell densities reach a threshold of concern, we'll take grab samples and send them to a lab. We're also initiating conversations with the County Department of Environmental Health to have a process in place that similar to what Humboldt County already has in place to do postings should cell counts determine there's a concern of blue-green algae toxins. So we're taking those precautionary steps now.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can I ask then that as that information comes in, that it be disseminated to us in real time or as close to that as we can get?
Certainly. And we do receive weekly they're called hydrology reports from the water agency, which include a water quality component. I receive those every week by email. I'm happy to provide those on a weekly basis to board members.
Then I had a question to follow up on Brenda Edelman's comment. Are you hearing from the water agency that there's no more water at all and that's the limitation on mitigation, and at the same time they are offering water to others? Are you getting the same mixed message?
I think I can answer that, if that's all right. Lake Sonoma is 83% full, but the water agency is under orders through the biological opinion to keep flows at a certain level. The requirements are so highly complex, I couldn't begin to convey them to you right now. But all the point I was trying to make was that if they they have enough water. The water is there. It's that they can't release enough to give us a higher level of flow because of the biological opinion. And the point I was trying to emphasize was that why is it they have water for new development and not water to provide a safe environment for the lower river? It is 83%. The water pool at Lake Sonoma is 83% full. The water is there. Thank you very much for your attention to
Thank
this
you.
Matter.
Thank you, Brenda. Okay, I believe that closes public comment. We'll have lunch served at 12:15. I think I want to have a 10-minute break.
Great.
And so about 17 till we'll reconvene.